It's season two of the Carson McCullough Center's weekly We of Me. This is the last of three episodes based on our interview with Academy Award-winning actress Rachel Weisz.
This segment of the interview has been edited for time and content.
We always ask our guests if they would like to read a passage from McCullers. And so I asked you if you would like to read something. And it's funny, you said, has everyone already chosen The Lover Beloved? And I go, yeah, well, Sarah Schulman beat you to that one. And you can read that if you like, but and we'd love it if you wanted to read anything you want to read. But have you chosen something that you would read for us?
Yes. I found something else. It was so funny just like leafing through the books. It really was like looking at a sort of a old friend or an old map that I knew my way around. Because yeah, when you first mentioned it to me, I just thought, oh yeah, that passage in the Ballad of the Sad Cafe, you know, almost everyone wants to be the lover. But I guess that's probably, is that a very famous passage?
I think that may be the most famous sort of set piece in all of McCullers.
Right. Well, the piece I found is in The Member of the Wedding. And I feel like it's the moment when, it's kind of a pivotal moment when Frankie really falls in love with her brother and his fiance, when she falls in love with the wedding. Talk about an unusual thing to fall in love with, a wedding.
Right.
And a groom. It's so, so glorious. So yeah, if that's okay.
Please, absolutely. It's terrific. Thank you.
I wish I could do it in your accent, but I'll just do it in my North English accent.
Well, hey, my accent is Texas, not Georgia. So, you know, you're probably just as close.
Okay.
Maybe not quite.
That's showing my ignorance of accents. Let me just see. So yeah, this is from about, I don't know, quite near the beginning of The Member of the Wedding. She went around town, and the things she saw and heard seemed to be left somehow unfinished. And there was the tightness in her that would not break. She would hurry to do something, but what she did was always wrong. She would call her best friend, Evelyn Owen, who owned a football suit and a Spanish shawl, and one would dress in the football suit and the other in the Spanish shawl, and they would go down to the 10-cent store together. But that was a wrong thing and not what Frankie wanted. Or after the pale spring twilights, with the smell of dust and flowers sweet and bitter in the air, evenings of lighted windows and the long-drawn calls at supper time, when the chimney swifts had gathered and whirled above the town and flown off somewhere to their home together, leaving the sky empty and wide. After the long twilights of this season, when Frankie had walked around the sidewalks of the town, a jazz sadness quivered her nerves and her heart stiffened and almost stopped. Because she could not break this tightness gathering within her, she would hurry to do something. She would go home and put the coal scuttle on her head like a crazy person's hat and walk around the kitchen table. She would do anything that suddenly occurred to her, but whatever she did was always wrong and not at all what she had wanted. Then, having done these wrong and silly things, she would stand sickened and empty in the kitchen door and say, I just wish I could tear down this whole town. Well, tear it down then, but quit hanging around here with that gloomy face. Do something. And finally, the troubles started. She did things and she got herself in trouble. She broke the law, and having once become a criminal, she broke the law again and then again. She took the pistol from her father's bureau drawer and carried it all over town and shot up the cartridges in a vacant lot. She changed into a robber and stole a three-way knife from the Sears and Roebuck store. One Saturday afternoon in May, she committed a secret, an unknown sin. In the McCain's garage with Barney McCain, they committed a queer sin, and how bad it was she did not know. The sin made a shriveling sickness in her stomach, and she dreaded the eyes of everyone. She hated Barney and wanted to kill him. Sometimes alone in the bed at night, she planned to shoot him with the pistol or throw a knife between his eyes. Her best friend, Evelyn Owen moved away to Florida, and Frankie did not play with anybody anymore. The long and flowering spring was over, and the summer in the town was ugly and lonesome and very hot. Every day she wanted more and more to leave the town, to light out for South America or Hollywood or New York City. But although she packed her suitcase many times, she could never decide to which of these places she ought to go or how she would get there by herself. So she stayed home and hung around the kitchen, and the summer did not end. By dog day, she was 5'5" 3/4" tall, a great big greedy loafer who was too mean to live. She was afraid, but not as she had been before. There was only the fear of Barney, her father, and the law. But even these fears were finally gone. After a long time, the sin in the McCain's garage became far from her and was remembered only in her dreams. And she would not think of her father or the law. She stuck close in the kitchen with John Henry and Berenice. She did not think about the war, the world. Nothing hurt her any longer. She did not care. She never stood alone in the backyard in order to stare up at the sky. She paid no attention to sounds and summer voices and did not walk the streets of town at night. She would not let things make her sad, and she would not care. She ate and wrote shows and practiced throwing knives against the side of the garage and played bridge at the kitchen table. Each day was like the day before, except that it was longer and nothing hurt her anymore. So that Sunday, when it happened, when her brother and the bride came to the house, Frankie knew that everything was changed. But why this was so and what would happen to her next, she did not know. And though she tried to talk with Berenice, Berenice did not know either. "It gives me this kind of pain," she said, "to think about them." "Well, don't," said Berenice. "You've done nothing but think and carry on about them all this afternoon." Frankie sat on the bottom step of the stairs to her room, staring into the kitchen. But although it gave her a kind of a pain, she had to think about the wedding.
That was wonderful. Terrific. Why that passage from Member of the Wedding?
It feels like when she's shifting from a kind of, she's falling in love. She's moving from a girl tomboy to a someone who can love and be in love. And I think it's probably very sexual, but she doesn't even know what that really is. So it's romance plus sex plus erotic life. It's this, yeah, she's shifting into, I mean, adolescence is a time where I think one is just crazy. I think it's proper like insanity. And I think this really captures that moment and the sense of, you know, the limits of her knowledge. She doesn't know what's happening. She just gets a funny feeling when she thinks about this couple. I also love the kind of, you know, how she toys and plays with violence and masculinity. You know, she takes her dad's gun and she thinks about murder. And I suppose as a 13-year-old girl sitting in North London, I didn't find much literature about girls my age where those things were examined. It was much more, mm-hmm. you know, things were more polite and feminine and tougher, as we keep saying. Yeah.
Well, do you remember other things that you were reading at that time? That was something else I was sort of curious about when you discovered McCullers. You must have been a reader or you wouldn't have picked up the book in the first place.
Yeah, I was a reader. I'm trying to think. I think I seem to remember around that time reading something very different, like Aldous Huxley's Brave New World or 1984. So very, very male, sort of male sci-fi dystopian books. They didn't speak to me in the same way.
You know, My partner and I, Susan, have been on these Neapolitan novels of Elena Ferrante recently. I don't know if you've read those, but they're spectacular. And it starts out with this friendship between these two girls in Naples. And it's incredible stuff. It really is. That's what we're on right now.
I was into Wordsworth.
Really?
Yeah. Still am. I love Wordsworth. He's not very fashionable, I know. And he was like super right-wing reactionary dude. But
well, he became so, didn't he?
Yeah, a bit. But I'm well into Wordsworth. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm a fan myself. What's a Wordsworth that you're admiring of?
My favorite is the very famous poem, Lines Composed Above Tintern Abbey. For me, that's just, I can go back to it every year because sort of about getting older and remembering being younger and all that stuff.
Anything else that you would want to say about Carson McCullers, the life, work, lasting legacy of Carson McCullers?
I so look forward to being back in Georgia and coming to Columbus. I hopefully next year I'll be able to do that.
That would be terrific. One more question I want to ask you is, can you imagine, you know, there I don't know if you've seen any of the film adaptations of McCullers' works.
I've seen The Member of the Wedding, and I have not yet seen Reflections in a Golden Eye, but...
you got to see that. It's spectacular. It really is. You know, John Huston directs it, and it's got Elizabeth Taylor, Brian Keith, Marlon Brando, and Julie Harris. Again, it's crazy good.
And there's a Ballad of the Sad Cafe, right, with Vanessa Redgrave.
It is, you know, and that would make me think that it would be wonderful. I'm not a big fan of that production. Can you imagine being involved in a new adaptation, a remake of one of the McCullers films? And which one do you think would be, you know, what would be a good choice?
For me to actually play a part or just
just which one would you like to see remake?
Oh, I see. Would I like to see brought to the screen freshly again? Well, I think the original Member of the Wedding film, I think that should just be left alone.
Well, you know, it has been remade, actually, in the 90s. Anna Paquin plays Frankie, and Alfre Woodard plays Bernice Sadie Brown. But I agree, the original 1950, whatever it is, version is terrific, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know that. I don't generally love... I mean, the Member of the Wedding film is an exception. Generally, I find seeing film adaptations quite reductive of things that I really love, because then it gets pinned down. Actually, I've got here, I was given for my birthday. I know this is just audio, but for my 50th birthday, this is what Hilton gave me. It's a cover of Theatre Arts, and it's... Julie Harris, Ethel Waters, and Brandon DeWilde. I guess it's a still from the stage performance. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's incredible, Ethel Waters. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is. She's wonderful. Well, you'll have to come to the house in Columbus, and I'll show you a picture, a portrait photograph of Ethel Waters that she gave to Carson that we have hanging at the house in Columbus. So when you come back to Atlanta, or maybe even you'll do a film project in Columbus sometime, that would be exciting. I'll make a deal with you. If you can get a film production in Columbus, you can stay at the Smith McCullers house. So how's that?
That is just an uneven deal. Yeah, I'm the winner.
Well,
incredible offer. Thank you.
Well,
but you have writers in residence there.
In fact, we have an annual writing fellowship, and Christine Vines is this year's writing fellow, and she's just finishing up. It's a fellowship that runs from September 1st through December 1st, and she is the 15th annual Carson, or she's the Marguerite and Lamar Smith Fellowship for Writers. That's Carson's parents' names. She has been in residence this fall, but we also have, when we have visiting writers, artists, musicians in the spring and summer, when the house is, you know, not currently occupied by the annual writing fellow, we have people stay there. And in fact, when Karen Allen came, you know, she made the film version of A Tree of Rock a Cloud, and we premiered it at the 100th birthday celebration of Carson McCullers in 2017. And while she was here to present the film and everything, she stayed at the McCullers house.
Really? So there's a real bedroom that her guests can stay in. That's so exciting.
Yes.
Very, very exciting. Thank you. I'm going to hold you to that.
I will.
I got to get the film made there first.
There you go. Yeah.
I've got work to do.
Thank you so much for doing this interview, Rachel. And that was a beautiful reading. And I can't wait until we can build the episodes, and I'll send you a link to them when they're ready to go.
Okay. It was a real honor to be included in this anthology, I guess, right?
Yep. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Carson McCullough Center's weekly We of Me. If you enjoyed this episode, you can find more at mccullerscenter.org or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. This podcast was brought to you by Columbus State University's Carson McCullough Center for Writers and Musicians and by Columbus State University's recording studio. The music you heard during the intro and outro was written by Lilia Uge in honor of Carson McCullough's 100th birthday on February 19th, 2017. I'm Nick Williams, technical director for these podcasts, and I hope you have a great day. Rachel Weiss's reading from The Member of the Wedding is in the Library of America's The Collected Works of Carson McCullers. The music you heard during the readings was movements 1 and 3 of Towards the Sea by Toru Takemitsu, performed live in Legacy Hall on March 6th, 2020.